start by just welcoming everyone to CORE Volunteer Training tonight. It's a program created to help support our volunteers, especially newer ones, connect with each other around the larger world and empower you to achieve your larger goals for climate advocacy. This week's essential topic is improving our communications, and I'm your host, Brett Cease, CCL's Volunteer Education and Engagement Coordinator, and we really thank you for joining us. So with me tonight is the wonderful Dave Folland. Dave is a retired pediatrician and the co-leader of the Salt Lake City chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. He's also one of the delegates for the Effective Communications Active Action Team, and we'll be sharing a bit more about that team's activity in the second half of the call. But Dave's been a CCL volunteer, one of the first original group starters over 7 years ago, and I believe just recently published his 100th letter to the editor on behalf of CCL. So if you're looking for somebody to give some good communication tips, not only with spoken word, but with a written pen, Dave's your man, and congratulations on that feat as well, Dave. On the learning goals side of things, we hope that three things emerge after tonight's lesson for attendees. We're really hoping that you can help locate and find effective communication tools and research within the Learning Center. We'll be highlighting where to find that and how to apply it in your own conversations. And we also hope that you can demonstrate, you know, all of these principles we're discussing in the field, or at least feel a little bit more grounded in some of the advice out there within social science about best practices. And Dave is going to specifically review some motivational interviewing techniques, including engaging in reflective listening, open-ended questions, and returning to common ground and finding that language. I'm going to be giving you a general survey of the field for a lot of the research that's out there. I'm going to be spending a lot of time actually focusing on the work of this wonderful author, Per Espen Stoknes, who's a Norwegian psychologist, and we're going to be reviewing a lot of his best practices. Again, I'll put those links in the window in just a little bit, but you can follow along with our slides. And then after that, we're going to really dive into some of the other research that we featured on community with Eco America and their wonderful team, as well as the work that the International Panel on Climate Change is putting out, the IPCC, on effective communication. And then from there, like I mentioned, Dave's going to take over, talk about motivational interviewing and the principles of effective communication. We'll do Q&A and our partner activity. So without further ado, let's jump right in. And I think just a really helpful way of framing this first half is this quote from Per that really is the motivation behind his research. And he asks this, the question that really drives me, and I'm guessing a lot of us on the call tonight as well, and what fuels his research is this, are we up to the task? Or are we inevitably short-term thinkers? Or, he writes, to put it a bit more constructively, what are the conditions under which humans will begin to think or act for the long term as far as the climate is concerned? And how can we communicate in a way that engages those levers? And is it possible, he writes, to pinpoint the mechanisms or functions in the human psyche that would enable us to act for the long term? And if so, how can they be strengthened? So let's dive into Per's research. And what I'll just say, if you're interested more in his, this quote is actually taken from a Yale 360 interview. I've put that in the chat window as well. And this whole series of the next slide that I'm about to feature can be found on a TED Talk that Per gave on the stage several years ago called How to Transform Apocalypse Fatigue into Action on Global Warming. And essentially, his premise is that the main obstacle in our communication often lies between our ears. There's five inner defenses that oftentimes in our communications with each other on this issue trip our listening audience up in getting more engaged or feeling like this is a solution they can be a part of. So let me just briefly identify those. He likes to label them. I think this is a really helpful tool as the five inner defenses, D for defenses, and they all have a D to theme out and help you remember. And with that, let's start with the first one. So Per reminds us that oftentimes in our communications, climate change can feel distant, far away in space, melting icebergs, time, mid-century projections, or 2100, or slow moving. He also says that it can also seem outside of our circle of influence. It's distant to me because what can we do? We prefer to think about things as humans in nearer things and nearer terms. The second D that Hare highlights is that of doom. So again, climate change, for better or worse, has been framed as looming disasters over and over the last 30 years. Research highlights actually that over 80% of news articles frames climate change coverage in simply disaster terminology and nothing else but that. And in his words, you know, people habituate to doom overuse, and that's where this term apocalypse fatigue comes from. He even goes as far to boldly say, we're getting numb from too much collapse porn. So with that challenge really comes this idea of how can we pair doom with solutions of engagement and hope. And we'll get into solutions in just a little bit, but that's a powerful statement. We've also had national calls, including Dr. Rob Weiler, cover this same phenomenon if you're interested in diving in more. He also highlights the D for dissonance, cognitive dissonance, inner discomfort. We often feel like our own inner hypocrites, whether we have to drive and commute a long ways to work. You know, so our brain comes up with defenses like, well, my neighbor has a bigger car, at least I'm using a Prius. Or, you know, I'm not changing my diet because it doesn't matter unless others do as well. Or even something as far-fetched as, well, the climate is always changing. And so Pear emphasizes that this D especially, dissonance, we need to tackle because our behaviors drive our attitudes. And it's really important to key in on what we might be doing to avoid creating more dissonance and how we can communicate that to make sure that attitudinal changes can follow. The fourth D is denial. And for that, really, it's just a build out in Pear's work from this concept of dissonance. And it doesn't come from a lack of intelligence or a lack of even education on this issue, Pear writes. Instead, it's more of an awareness of things that are going on, but a choice not to engage. Kind of a double life of knowing and not knowing, and being reinforced by others in your community or your own space, agreeing not to bring up a topic that creates that denial or that dissonance. And then lastly, identity. That's a little bit of a stretch, as you can see. I guess he considers the second letter of the word to also cover for D. But in identity, this is one that we're actually going to have a whole sequence of another Core Volunteer training on when we talk about communicating across the aisle. We're going to have both our Conservative Outreach Director and our National Partnership Coordinator talk about ways that we can speak to the identity and the values of conservatives and progressives on this issue specifically. So I'll just throw out a teaser out there right now. But again, in Pear's research, he highlights that our cultural identity, our political ideology, they override facts. He says the values that we hold eat facts. This isn't anything too surprising for those that have tried communicating perhaps with people that have a different cultural identity than you. And for him, because of that, it's key to not only focus on ways to communicate to these defenses, but instead frame the way we talk about this issue in terms of the 5S solutions. So let's quickly just go over those. And again, all of these are available in his talk as well as our slide notes tonight. But the first one that he really encourages us to really think of, and we'll have some slides on each of these solutions in just a little bit, this is just a helpful way to begin framing, is making distance social. So bringing it near and personal and home, back in our own backyards again, helping spread even social norms with our own decisions. He gives the powerful, contagious example of rooftop solar and how oftentimes that will transform whole neighborhoods after an early adopter role models that behavior and helps bring not only far-fetched impacts but also solutions into the neighborhood. He also highlights the importance of support. Social science, at least, research highlights a 3-to-1 ratio. So for every doom message, having 3 focused helpful focused frames is absolutely essential. Focusing on things like human health, new technology opportunities, safety, new jobs, national security framing and boosting that. Any way that you would like to dress this way as a solution and framing in a way that isn't just doom is key, according to Pear's research. The last three are keeping things simple, focusing on measurable achievement results, not something, again, that's far off, but nudges instead with our own lives, and also policies that feel simple and accessible rather than far off and technocratic. We're in luck with that one. And then signal, being able to also provide real-time feedback for the work that we're doing to motivate our own improvement. That one's a little bit less far off on the communication, but we've included it just for the sake of highlighting it. And then lastly, storytelling. And that's a whole nother webinar that we'll have in the Core Volunteer Training Sequence. But what Pear writes about stories is just the importance of reimagining out how we tell our stories. Is a really powerful story that closes his book about thinking about climate as living air, not just some abstract thing that we're concerned about, but something that we breathe in and surrounds us every day. It's a really powerful story. For the sake of brevity tonight, I won't get into it, but I do recommend diving in more to this if you're curious. So if you haven't already heard of the organization EcoAmerica, we've had their executive director, Bob Perkowitz, to our national conferences. We feature their research on our own community website. And I just put a link to their wonderful resource, Let's Talk Climate, that we're featuring here. They've done extensive research on messages that motivate Americans. I'm just going to kind of help transcribe Pear's research, especially those 5S solutions, into what EcoAmerica says is a really important sequence when you're presenting. And again, this is to perhaps a larger audience or to a group of people that you're new to. Having a chance to connect in this way, they've found to be really effective in grounding your communications because flow and sequence does matter. They're also really upfront and out of the gate in sharing that there is no silver bullet, but here's things that they've found do actually positively impact the way that you can connect with your audience. So let's jump right into describing those. They first off emphasize the importance of bonding and really establishing that rapport with your audience or with your conversational partner to help them feel like you're invested in their interests, you're not viewing them as adversarial, and finding a way immediately, whether it's through your own story, to connect with them, to even make yourself humble or laughable or the subject that they can identify with. And from there, really build out from this story, the scale of the challenge that we face from our own personal stories to what the planet overall is dealing with. We also emphasize, and this is partly what we covered actually last week with, or 2 weeks ago with our presentations webinar, the importance of focusing on facts. Focus on your own stories, focus on local impacts, again, repeating what Pear has already shown, with irrefutable facts and observations that you've seen in your own life, in your own community, that they can too witness, rather than feeling like something far off that's easier to dispute or engage in debate with, and include trusted messengers. We often feature the work of climate scientist Dr. Hayhoe, who we featured here. But it can be anyone else that you know that would be a really important source in that communication to bring in as another validator. And we also want to make sure that climate impacts are not only framed locally, but also how they might connect to our own daily lives, the here and the now, minimizing that distance gap again. And then this is getting back to that 3-to-1 ratio. We want to inspire and stick on focusing on solutions. Whatever it is for you, be authentic and look to ways that you can highlight solutions that can speak to how we benefit our economy, our health, our national security, again, by taking action on that and really inviting your audience to be collectively working to address that climate change, the threat and the risks that come from climate change in your interactions. If you're interested in specific words that have been actually tested in focus groups, EcoAmerica has a lot of information on that as well. I know that was a question that came up before we got started tonight. Again, that's highlighted in your resource packet in the link that I just put in the chat window. But for tonight, we won't spend too much time on these. I think they're just really helpful to focus on several of them, from talking about how there are damages to the climate, again, the frame of creating healthy and safe communities, protecting future generations or children's health, local, homegrown, clean energy, you name it. Again, all of these are really helpful in your own creation and your own framing of your own story, being able to incorporate in a way that engages your audience to be more interested and less threatened by the way you're communicating about this challenge that we face. And then lastly, I also just put out here that the IPCC has a wonderful handbook that they've essentially commissioned, and it's the first time that they've really offered guidance from the world's leading scientific body on climate change on how to be more effective with not only science communicators, but as members of the general public. So if you're interested in that, this link I've just put in the chat window as well. It's got a wealth of research on the science of climate change communication and focuses on practical tips, a lot of which reinforce what we've covered tonight, as well as some case studies. And so that's a really wonderful and important one that I wanted to spotlight, and we can get into with questions if people would like to during the Q&A section. And then I'll just lastly highlight that we have many lessons. So if you wanted to dive in based on tonight's discussion to what Rob Weiler or Jonathan Haidt or the IPCC or EcoAmerica have talked about, several other research psychologists, all of these are available in community under our communications lessons pathway. And we'll go directly into your side of really kind of bringing this down into the personal.
Yeah, well, thanks, Brett. That was just a wonderful overview. And at first, it may seem a little bit overwhelming, you know, that, oh boy, there's so much to learn here or to think about. And indeed, there is. One thing beautiful about the effective communication is, you know, you can go as deep or shallow as you want. I had this experience that when I heard about climate change, got involved in climate change, one of the early books I had read was Jane Hansen's Storms of My Grandchildren. And I happened to take that with me on a backpack up into the Wind Rivers with my two brothers and my brother-in-law and a few other people. And they like to fish. So when they go out and fish, I'd sit and read Storms of My Grandchildren. Well, Jim Hansen lays it out of how bad things really can be. And so I did just what you were saying. We have to avoid number two there, disaster. Yeah, of how disastrous this could be. And somehow they didn't jump on and say it was too. In fact, I found halfway through the trip, their eyes kind of glazed over. And I kind of learned firsthand that, you know, that just talking about how serious it is or how bad it is or something is not the solution. So I was really delighted to learn a little bit more of some of these things that Per was talking about. And one of the ones that opened my eyes was Catherine Hayhoe. Now, there she is. Many of you may know her. She's a climate scientist. She's an evangelical Christian. And she was one of the most effective communicators about climate change that I have heard. And I had the actually opportunity, she spent 5 days with us in Utah, and to see her up close, how she would identify the values of the people that she was speaking to and then speak to that. One of the great stories I like is this. She went to a Rotary Club, and she had her presentation kind of prepared. And when she got to the Rotary Club, she saw that the Rotary has club on the wall, they have their common values. They have a four-way test. And, you know, is it truth? Is it fair? Is it have goodwill? Is it beneficial? Well, while everybody else was eating, she was rearranging her slides around those four core values. And so when she presented this to the Rotary Club, she presented it in the context of their four core values. And I haven't heard her presentation, but I could just imagine it was much more effective than it would have been by approaching it from a different approach. And so I've learned from Catherine Hayhoe that initial finding common values and starting from common values really can open the communication. I was able to expand that further, though, when I learned that we had motivational interviewing, which we are calling effective communication, which basically this is, because motivational interviewing may sound like kind of a clinical term, motivational interviewing. And really what we're talking about there is effective communication. And the history of it, though, is it actually came about kind of in a clinical setting. So there was a treatment facility that treated drug addicts. And one of the psychologists observed that some of the therapists were so much more effective than others in motivating their clients to more move forward and move away from drugs. And so he actually did a study about what is the difference in the way that those effective therapists communicated compared to those who were less effective. And what came out of that is a series of both techniques and approaches that has come to be called motivational interviewing. And it's actually then moved out of the clinical setting of a psychologist interaction to other settings, you know, like business or in our setting. So a lot of what we talk about motivational interviewing really relates to kind of one-on-one conversation. And some things we talked about before maybe relate a little bit more to either written conversation or to presentations. But on one-on-one interactions, the techniques which developed out of motivational interviewing are very helpful. And what we'd like to do today is just highlight a couple of those to kind of get you moving in that direction. So the basic part of this comes back to one of our core values in Citizens Climate Lobby of relationships, respect, appreciation, and gratitude. So, you know, when we go to meet a member of Congress or somebody else in where we want to have discussion, we need to come from that position of respect, appreciation, and gratitude. And we go to the next number there, number two and number three, that a lot of people don't maybe actually recognize this, but when we judge a person, it really is first intuition. Very quickly, we kind of size up a person intuitively. And how does that come from? Where does that come from? Well, we pick up on a whole bunch of nonverbal cues. And if a person that we are meeting with has a positive outlook on us, expectation of being positive, we pick up on that. And that's really important because there is a concept called emotional leakage. And what that is, you know, we might want to think we can hold our feelings about that person private, but they leak out. And again, a person will pick up whether we like them, whether we care about them, whether we respect them, and so forth. And so actually Dave Christian, who has our motivational interviewing group and effective communication, likes to tell us to, if we find we're in that situation where we don't have that appreciation gratitude, we need to go to the Hokey Pokey Clinic. If you even know the Hokey Pokey Clinic, you turn yourself about. The idea is we really need to get into position of appreciation, gratitude, and so forth, and have that really be authentic. So I think another concept, though, that really helps me in thinking about our interactions is that that person that we're talking to, if we can think about them as a partner. And in fact, another thing that Dave says that I really like, too, is to think about how that interaction feels. Does it feel more like a dance or does it feel more like a fight? And I can think of conversations I've been in where we were just kind of going back and forth, kind of fighting. And I can think of other ones where it seemed to just flow so nicely. And I could sense that. So that's something to think about when you're actually having a discussion, having an interaction. How does it feel? And I think, Austin, I was just going to give an example. I had an example that really kind of tickled me. I have a friend who've been friends for years and years and years, but our friendship developed around sports and some other things, and we never talked about politics because we're on opposite sides of the fence. He was a conservative Republican military person. I was a bit more liberal, and so we just didn't talk about that. But as I got involved with climate change, I started bringing up issues, and I told John some things I was seeing, that he would come back with just the denial arguments. So we went back and forth a little bit, and I kind of felt, well, that communication is not going anywhere. So I kind of didn't have a lot of communication. Well, anyway, recently I had learned about this effective communication, motivational interviewing, and did some things I'm going to tell you about in just a minute. And we just had a conversation that flowed for about 45 minutes. It was beautiful. And the affirming thing for me is his wife is a therapist. And unbeknownst to me, she was listening to this. She said, "Hey, Dave, you know, I really observe you're doing a very good motivational interviewing with John." So anyway, we had a conversation that was rich and full that had never been before. Two of us who were on very different sides of the opinion about climate change. Well, as we approach and begin this motivational interviewing, there are four basic skills that we talk about: open-ended questions, affirmations, reflective listening, and summarizing. And what I like to do today is just highlight two of those because they're easy to understand, and without too much work, a person can use these. And what I think you'll find by using open-ended questions and reflective listening reflectively, that you'll open up conversation in a way that you may not have done before. So let's just go into open-ended questions. Think about the difference of these two questions. The first one says, "Will you support carbon fee and dividend legislation? Yes, no. Okay, case closed, conversation ended. Well, consider this one. How much do you know about our bill?" Well, that's not a yes or no answer. Again, that's opening the discussion. It's opening the conversation. And again, that dance that I talked about, we want that to come through our understanding where they're coming from and, you know, having this open communication, which can come from open-ended questions. And if you think about, well, you know, how do I frame an open-ended question? What do I come up with? Well, Dave Christian likes to talk about the six W's, which we put on here: who, what, when, where, why, and how. So most any question that starts with one of those six W's, and how, we put that in there too, kind of fudged a little bit, W's on the end. But that is more likely to open the discussion and open the communication and to go to the discussion. So then, after they respond to this next part of reflectively listening actually then enhances the communication further. So we listen to their thoughts, feelings, maybe the pros and cons of what they're saying, both stated and what what's implied. So for an example, you might say something like this: "What I hear you saying," well, say you're talking about carbon fee and dividend with somebody, and you might say something, "Well, what I hear you saying is that you don't trust the federal government to return all the revenues back to the people." So you reflect it back, and they can do a couple of things. One is, if you're on target, you understood them, they feel listened to, and they're going to continue communication. Or maybe you didn't quite understand it exactly right, and they're going to correct you. But either way, that reflecting it back can help the communication. Another one might be this: "Boy, you seem frustrated that you can't find a Republican to join you as a Democrat on the Climate Solutions Caucus." So you're kind of reflecting back the feeling that you're experiencing. So whether you reflect back their thoughts, what they say, or what their feelings are, again, they feel listened to, and that enhances the communication. So I'd like you to just think of those open-ended questions, reflectively listen, because in a minute we're going to talk, we're going to give you an opportunity to practice those a little bit, and also have a chance to have you ask any questions or explore that a little bit. And I must say, from my own experience, this involvement with the effective communication teams has been one of the most fun and rewarding things that I've done with Citizens Climate Lobby. And so I'd really encourage anybody who's interested in improving their communications to at least dip their toe in the water and see if there's something that, you know, you really might be interested in. And so there's kind of two ways to go about it. And here we have the action team. So one is to join the action team. So if you join the action team, then you will get notices of the meetings. Now, the meetings that we have are the second Wednesday of each month. And we took a break during the summer. And the next one coming up is September 12th, Wednesday, September 12th. It's 6 p.m. Mountain Time. So from that, you can figure what your time might be. But another thing, though, I would say is, if you're not quite sure, you want to jump into it. This introduction to motivational interviewing is a wonderful way to get an overview and kind of determine whether that kind of resonates with yourself and your style. So what that is, the very first time that Dave Christian had a motivational interviewing training. So you'll go from oars, which we talked about today, kind of that basic first interaction, to other things. How do you move beyond that? How do you move once you get that dance and a good conversation going, how do you move beyond that? And then, depending on your interests, you could either go back in any of the previous sessions, or I think personally, myself, a live session is just more engaging to me than listening to the past, but that's available too. So previous recordings are there.
For the last part of our call tonight, if you would like to stay on, we still have about 5 minutes left, and you're welcome to stay on anytime after that as well. We always end with a partner action. And tonight's pretty straightforward. Again, the overview of why we do this is social science research shows that if we have the support system where we have other people in our lives that help us set and achieve short-term measurable goals and then really can celebrate that with us, we're much more effective. We're much more likely to achieve what we're setting out to accomplish. We're much more likely to feel like we're doing effective things in our lives. And so we want to provide that as a CCL family to each other. And so we're actually going to have a chance to break out into partner groups and really demonstrate a short, breakout activity that really demonstrates a lot of what Dave shared tonight about some effective communications principles. So you'd be welcome to really just with your partner share a bit about your name and your background, what you brought to hear you tonight. But then also just start thinking about a real world situation where you are working with someone with a different opinion. It can be on climate, it can be something else, you name it. Your partner is going to role play this other individual for you, and you're going to practice using two techniques: open-ended questions to really elicit more information, and then reflective listening to engage a depth in that conversation. Now, all this is, again, written out in that short link. If you have any questions about the instructions, we can also put it in the chat window, too. But you're welcome to really have a chance to dive in and practice this in action rather than just hearing about it. And I often find as a kinesthetic learner, I don't really learn or capture and crystallize what I've been taught until I actually have a chance to apply it directly. So that's what we're trying to provide. But we'd love for you to be able to take this lesson tonight and apply it in your own life and hear how it's going. And Dave and I's contact information are available here. It's just dsfolland@gmail.com if you're calling in and can't see this for Dave. And then for me, it's brett@citizensclimate.org. And we'll just close by saying thank you again. Thank you all for making the time, putting in the research, stretching in your own comfort zones and really building out how you too can be more effective in your communications. We look forward to learning what's worked for you. We hope you found tonight's webinar helpful, and we wish you a wonderful rest of your night, everyone.